Reforming America's Marijuana Prohibition Laws takes education, lobbying, and voting. From Washington, D.C. to your state capitol to your city hall, marijuana law reform involves all levels of civic life. Learn how you can make your impact with elected officials as we take a look at our government at work.
Welcome back, everyone. 32 After the Hour, and today in our Government at Work, we are joined by John Getman, a former director of Normal and one of the most educated people on this topic that we could possibly talk to. John, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Russ. Glad to join you.
Thank you so much for being here. And the topic, of course, is this rescheduling decision by the DEA, or I should say decision not to reschedule by the DEA, cannabis being in Schedule 1. And for our listeners out there, the reason why it's so perfect to have John here is he's one of the few people that's actually petitioned the DEA on behalf of Normal and other organizations to reschedule and been rejected. So, John, were you at all surprised by this rejection?
No, I'm sorry to say that I wasn't surprised at all. I was wrapped up in this for like 16 years on two different rescheduling attempts. And actually, when I joined Normal, they were just wrapping up a 22-year effort to try this. And I kind of hoped that maybe that when the states of Washington and Rhode Island tried this, and also one of my old colleagues New Mexico, who also tried this, but yeah, so I was hoping maybe because the states had asked, maybe asked nicely as opposed to being a reform activist, they'd react differently. But well, looking over the reasoning, the logic, and the fine print, and the detail, no, it's the same argument they've been making for years, just in slightly different detail, slightly different versions. But it's the classic round peg in a square hole argument, and really, I thought that what was the third attempt to reschedule, it was my second attempt, failed. But I think that sort of proved me the Controlled Substances Act wasn't really an appropriate framework for marijuana reform, and this latest effort really just confirmed that.
You know, I've been saying since this came out that it's like trying to fit a leaf-shaped drug through a pill-shaped hole, and with your round peg square hole, same basic idea. So when we hear Hillary Clinton as a presidential candidate promising to reschedule to Schedule 2 once she's elected, is that a viable promise, or is the very structure itself, doesn't matter who we elect, it's going to stay in Schedule 1?
I think it's a sincere promise on her part. She's playing catch up on this issue, and it's not one that she's nearly as fully briefed or has the expertise or advice on as she does on many other issues. It's one that's really just popped up recently on her political radar. By the way, your description of the situation I thought was much better than mine. But
maybe
the point here, one of the issues here is that it's like with marijuana arrests in general. There's a lot we can criticize the cops on, but they didn't write the laws. And there's a lot here we can criticize DEA, and for that matter, FDA, about on this. But they didn't write this law either. And I think really the problem here is a fundamental one with the statute. It was written. It was written for pharmaceutical drugs, and I have a lot of things to criticize the DEA about, but I don't mean to oversimplify or trivialize their efforts, but let me just appear to do that. Their job is to count pills. Their job is to count pills at a factory and in display court, in distribution corridors, and in pharmacies, and make sure none have leaked out of the system. That is, in the late 60s, when this early 70s, when this framework, the FSA, was designed, they're thinking about speed, about amphetamines, about PEP pills, and about tranquilizers and sedatives. I don't think tranquilizers were invented then. But the point is, they're thinking about pharmaceutical drugs and how you can monitor them. And, academic commentators have pointed out that kind of regimen works when you have, when you control the technology of production. It's kind of hard to control the technology of production with pot. That's what CSA doesn't really work with it. Anybody can grow it anywhere. But, if you're talking about something you need a large factory to do, it's kind of easy for the DEA to keep track of it. So, on that basic premise, it's not going to work. And then there's a second problem, by the way, marijuana is a little bit too complicated to be reviewed as a pharmaceutical drug. Again, this is made for something like codeine. But the other problem here, it's a real subtle one, and it's one that any president's going to run into. And actually, you know, I'm beginning to think Obama was pretty smart in saying, look, Congress has to do this. There's a classic problem in government. It's something we teach in introductory courses, public administration. There's an inherent clash between the political appointees and the long-term career professional civil servants who work for the government. And in this case, those long-term career civil servants, they're the ones who do the extensive scientific review of any substance that is being considered for rescheduling. And then when they come up with a recommendation, the political appointees, they sort of have to follow that recommendation. They have a little wiggle room. But here's the problem. If there's this is magic saying about administrative actions. The courts will let the government do what it wants to do as long as what they want to do is not unreasonable, arbitrary, or capricious. And that's why they can interpret the fee as they want to, and that's why even though we've had reasonable arguments to reschedule, they've had a reasonable basis for not rescheduling. Now, here's the problem. Unreasonable means that they have a rational argument. Arbitrary means they didn't make a snap decision. They actually thought about it for a while and studied it. Those things are pretty self-evident. Capricious is an interesting one. It basically means they didn't treat one set of issues a certain way and the issue at hand another way. And here's what would happen. If Clinton ordered the bureaucracy to reschedule, and the bureaucracy, you know, did a scientific review and they recommended otherwise, and then Clinton's political appointees overrode that, well, you know, it'd be rescheduling. It would be challenged by opponents of rescheduling, and they'd say that the move was capricious, that it wasn't consistent with how things have been dealt with in the past. Mm. Now, I think there's a way around all that, but I think it's just too much of an administrative mess and too much of a legal mess and too much of a time-consuming mess to really be a viable way to do this. Basically, Congress has to deal with this, and the more people try to use rescheduling, you just give Congress an out, an excuse not to do their job.
And I think, thank you so much for that perspective on that, because a lot of people bring up that the Controlled Substances Act says that, you know, upon the Attorney General's signature or the President's whim, whatever, however it's written, that they could make this change. But yeah, would it stick? That's the good point. Other things that we get out of this decision, lately there's been a meme going around Facebook of people taking pictures of their palm of their hand, with the number 6630507 on it, representing the federal government's patent on cannabinoids as neuroprotectants and antioxidants, which kind of makes the government's point. It's a cannabinoid, right?
Exactly. The dispute here is not over the substances in marijuana. The dispute is over the plant marijuana as a delivery device for those substances. Indeed, GW Pharmaceuticals product Sativex is actually found a nice way around all this. They came up with a consistent compound, a compound that's always the same. Everybody use it is taking the same compound. You can test that. You can run trials on it. They've gotten approved in European countries and Canada. They're going through FDA through trials to meet FDA requirements here. It's a spray under the tongue. That'll get approved. Marinol, THC pill, that's already been approved. And there'll be other cannabinoid substances that pharmaceutical companies can manufacture if they're just that. Pharmaceuticals. That'll all work. But yeah, that patent is not, you know, the government actually doesn't dispute the fact that the cannabinoids have some value. The science there is kind of irrefutable. There are problems with the delivery device. And if you go into the very long document the DEA published in the Federal Register, they say, look, you know, there's actually only been about 20 studies, or maybe it was 11, but a handful of studies. And they say, you know, these are good studies, but they don't use the same compounds. There's no consistent results about, you know, dose and response and safety. And they say that really these are proof of concept studies that, you know, help us or help science move on to more sophisticated studies. And frankly, just admitting that these are indeed proof of concept, I think it kind of under-recognizes the value of these studies, and I also think that there's a lot out of whack here with the way they've chosen to interpret science. But the fact that they've acknowledged that these studies are valid and they actually prove something is a step forward for them.
Another thing we got out of the decision and the press conferences and press releases that came after it was a statement from Chuck Rosenberg, the head of the DEA, talking about how marijuana's classification in Schedule 1 doesn't mean that it's as dangerous as heroin or acid or PCP. It just means that it's a Schedule 1 drug. We've got about a minute and a half, John. Any thoughts on that pronouncement?
I wanted to make a legal argument that you have to prove that addiction issue, that abuse potential issue, that the statute has the word "and" in it, meaning it's a conjunctive statute, which is a big legal issue. What they're saying is that because of the treaties the U.S. has signed, the Single Convention Treaty, marijuana could only be in Schedule 1 or 2, and therefore the addiction issue, the abuse potential issue, is irrelevant. And so that's just a secondary issue. I think they're misinterpreting the federal court decision in the 1970s, part of Normal's original litigation. I believe a correct interpretation of what the appeals court says was, you guys, the court really said this, you guys look at all the science, find out what the science says, and if the treaty has to be changed, then go change the treaty. The DEA is interpreting it differently, but his point is that because of the way they interpret the treaty and because of what the appeals court said in the 1970s, the abuse potential thing is irrelevant. It's really all about accepted medical use.
All right, John Getman, doing such great work here, researching, petitioning, all this work you've been doing. Just in the last couple seconds we got here, tell people how they might contact you and find out more about your latest work.
Well, I have a website, drugscience.org, but I haven't updated it for several years, and I'll be kind of shifting it to a new site in the near future, but there's an email address on there. I'm doing some work on racial disparities, another demographic aspects of marijuana arrests. I have a big report about that coming out this fall before the election, and another report coming out later this year on racial disparities in all drug arrests.
All right, John Getman, thank you so much for joining us here and offering your expertise on a very complex issue. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. Anytime. Glad to see you. Talk to you.
All right, stay tuned, folks. Coming up next, we've got Derek Davis, the CEO of California Cannabis CPA, on marijuana and finance.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.